Well, the NBA season, day one in the books. Well, a half a day in the books. The Kings will get back after it at 5 o'clock. How are you, Mr. Christie?
My friend, I am fantastic. Got to see a little training camp. It's nothing like training camp day one, Grant. And, you know, you got training camp. You got football. Baseball's jumping off. Hockey's coming. I mean, this is a sports fan's nirvana.
We've got football to talk about with last night, Monday Night Football, wrapping up with Dallas beating Arizona. We're going to talk with John Clayton coming up at 3:30, and then really a disturbing story coming out as it relates to college basketball. Aaron Torres, a college sports analyst, is going to come out with us at 4 o'clock to talk about that. 4:30, Anthony Becht, former NFL tight end and current ESPN college football analyst, and then at 5 o'clock, our very good buddy, Charles Davis. But that story that broke earlier today as it relates to the scandal in college basketball pointing directly at Louisville as one of the programs. If this is true, I can't imagine Louisville, because of what just happened recently, not getting the death penalty.
Obviously, Coach Pitino, he said, you know, I know nothing about that. They talked to the mother. She said she knew nothing about it. But the unfortunate thing, Grant, is that the kids keep getting taken advantage of.
Yep.
And, you know, the money, a lot of them come from areas where maybe they don't have certain things, so they want them. And the, you know, tantalizing them in a lot of different things. That doesn't make it right.
Bribe.
It is. Thank you. That is by definition correct. I think the hammer's going to come down here.
I do too.
When I see the word arrest and there were multiple made, the hammer's going to come down.
Yeah, we're talking about charges of fraud and corruption against 10 people, including someone that I know and I'm sure you know.
Yes.
Chuck Person, who spent time here in Sacramento as an assistant coach. So Auburn's Chuck Person, Oklahoma State's Lamont Evans, Arizona's Emmanuel Richardson, and USC's Tony Bland included in that. But charges of fraud and corruption against 10 people.
You know, Grant, the thing is, we can't act like this isn't something that it happens quite often. Why are they coming? Maybe the evidence is irrefutable. It's, you know, it's something that, because this is something that I've heard many, many times coming up through the ranks and a lot of the different things that you see, whether it's AAU coaches, you know, putting shoes on kids. I don't know why it's coming down now, but boy, oh boy, it's coming down.
Well, yeah, because James Gatto was also arrested. He's the director of global sports marketing for Adidas, and another Adidas employee also arrested. And, you know, again, this is from the acting United States attorney for the Southern District of New York during a press conference, a news conference. Quote, for the 10 charged men, the madness of college basketball went well beyond the big dance in March. Month after month, the defendants exploited the hoop dreams of student athletes around the country, allegedly treating them as little more than opportunities to enrich themselves through bribery and fraud schemes.
That's the tough piece, and you just said it, Grant, because, you know, the kids, they have hoop dreams. That's the term used, and that's what they're basing everything on. Is there a lot? Is it lucrative? A lot of money in shoes, in a lot of different things? Yes, there are. And to take advantage of that is a tough piece. And I think this will probably set a precedence. The way that it's coming out right now looks like the hammer is going to come down hard on some people.
Well, it is going to come down hard on some people, and you wonder, all right, what is going to happen to the particular universities? Because I want to read one paragraph here. This is from ESPN.com. The FBI complaint against Gatto, who, again, is with Adidas, and others, also included a reference to a public research university located in Kentucky, identified as University 6 in the complaint.
Okay.
And University of Louisville interim president Gregory Postel confirmed in a statement it is the school mentioned. There was also a reference to a private research school in Florida, and sources told ESPN it's the University of Miami. Here is a quote from the acting president at the University of Louisville. quote, today the University of Louisville received notice that it is included in a federal investigation involving criminal activity related to men's basketball recruiting. While we are just learning about this information, this is a serious concern that goes to the heart of our athletic department and the university. U of L is committed to ethical behavior and adherence to NCAA rules, and violations will not be tolerated. We will cooperate fully with law enforcement or NCAA investigation into this matter. Again, the allegations against the unnamed school, which appears to be Louisville,
right,
include payments of $100,000 from Adidas to the family of an unnamed player identified as Player 10 to ensure him signing with the school. All right. Now, the FBI alleged that Gatto and three others attempted to broker a deal to send another high school player to Miami, an Adidas-sponsored school, for $150,000. Here's the bottom line. All right. Let's start with Louisville first. If these allegations are true, and, you know, based on what just went happened with Louisville and Rick Pitino, and, you know, they're going to get the death penalty, and they should get the death penalty.
Yes.
Okay? And to think about a University of Louisville and the basketball tradition, if you want to go back to Denny Crum, if you want to think about the death penalty, I mean, it's just it's unbelievable to me.
Yes. And so that you put this in its proper perspective, Grant, you're paying a kid, or you're paying someone $100,000 to get that kid, or paying the kid's family $100,000 to get them to come to a school that is sponsored by said athletic, you know, Adidas, whoever it is. The key there is, Grant, that they probably then sit in first place if that kid then goes to the pros to sign that big contract, if they turn out to be a LeBron James, a Kobe Bryant, a somebody like that. So the money that is invested is a small investment to try to get ahead of the game. And each of the coaches, Grant, arrested, face up to 80 years in prison.
Well, let me read the and again, I'm only doing this because of what the ties to Sacramento with Chuck Person and his years with the Sacramento Kings, all right? He's accused of accepting $91,500 in bribes to steer two players toward a financial advisor. He said he gave more than $18,000 to the players' families. Person, by the way, was suspended without pay, effective immediately, according to Auburn officials this afternoon.
Grant, it's hard for me to believe that he's the only person in that thing that knew about it, but he's taken the bullet.
Well,
do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm not saying, and you're
and
right.
And I don't know
there
that.
There will be others.
Okay, because that type of money, $18,000, man, for a kid, that is absolutely a lot of money, and it would probably guarantee a kid going to said school, but this isn't the first time these things have happened.
And Person's not the head coach at Auburn. He's the associate head coach.
Yes, just like Rick Pitino is the head coach at Louisville, but he's not the person that is charged with this. But they are the one that's in power over everybody else.
Yeah, it would be very hard for me to believe that Rick Pitino would not know that that was going on.
So in the article that I read, Grant, it said Rick was quoted as saying, and I'm paraphrasing, that when we signed this kid, I was like, whoa, this just kind of fell in our lap. I am totally surprised. And I'm thinking, this is a five-star kid. There's no idea of how we got our hook into this kid.
I don't believe it.
I didn't believe it when I read it. I just went, oh, okay, and we're supposed to believe that.
All right. It looks like Dwayne Wade is planning on signing with the Cavaliers. If it does happen and he becomes a member of the Cavaliers, how good does that make them?
Well, I think already, Grant, you can say that they're probably number one or two in the Eastern Conference. There's only probably three teams, really, that are vying: Washington, Boston, and Cleveland. They already pretty much had two starting fives. That would probably put Iman Shumpert or J.R. Smith on the bench. So he's now coming in as a hired hand in a second unit. I think that that may, you know, because he's not going to play all 82 games. I'm saying that he's good for a good 60 games and really ready to go in the playoffs. I say that that probably solidifies them in the Eastern Conference as Eastern Conference champions.
All right. We've got that. That's going on. Dwayne Wade, again, looks like he's going to sign with the Cavaliers. I talked about Odell Beckham on the show a day ago and told you that I think the guy's a disgrace. The owner of the New York Giants, I should say the co-owner, John Mara, said today in an email sent to multiple media outlets, and I'm quoting, "I do not want to get into a discussion about this, but I will say that I am very unhappy with Odell's behavior on Sunday, and we intend to deal with it internally." Well, they've been trying to deal with this guy for 4 years, and nothing has worked. And so, and how many playoff wins do you have since Odell Beckham's been in New York? The answer to that question is zero. So if you're not winning with him, he's not worth the aggravation. He's not worth the trouble. And so, therefore, if I'm the New York Giants, at the end of this year, I don't give him his mega deal that he's looking for. I work out a trade, and I move him out of town. That's what I would do.
Yeah, I say that if there is going to be a change in something acceptable for the New York Giants that makes them happy with Odell representing their brand and their logo, this is the tipping point to make that happen.
And Odell Beckham lost all credibility with me when a day after he said it was related to the comments by the president. Well, he didn't even allude to that when he talked openly and freely about it after the game Sunday in Philadelphia. All right. Had that been the case, he would have talked about it on Sunday after the game. But he changed his tune. All right, on social media, after receiving a couple of social media inquiries about you did this because of what the president said, right? It was that type of thing. If that were true, he would have made that statement in the locker room on Sunday after the game. He talked about what he did on the field. He talked about how he would continue to do that on the field and had nothing to do with the president's comments. So that's nonsense. So this is what he said, all right? And this is the part that bothers me, okay? He said that he had no regrets, all right? I'm a dog, so I acted like a dog. I don't know if the rule book said you can't hike your leg. He said I peed on somebody, so I was trying to find the imaginary ghost that I peed on, but I didn't see him. This guy's a joke, all right? It's a joke. And you know what? Shame on Ben McAdoo for being gutless in disciplining this guy the way he should. Shame on the coach of the Giants. Shame on Ben McAdoo, who's, you know, you want to talk about a dog. He's acting like a little puppy dog, you know, who went pee on the carpet and is being scolded, okay? Shame on Ben McAdoo. Seriously. This is disgraceful. It really is.
Grant, the fact that he's changed his tune is just kind of, obviously that's questionable because when the micro, he seems like a calculated individual.
Exactly.
He would plan what he's going to do. So I'm not really buying that. When he said, I'm a dog, I act like a dog, I was like, oh, okay, that's your thing. Now you are going to penalize your team for that. I have no problem with celebrations if it doesn't penalize your team because you got to take that into consideration when you're doing it. This is going to be interesting to see how they handle this because this is just a regular talent, Grant. This guy can play.
Yeah, but you know what? And again, I hate to keep on going back to DeMarcus Cousins, but I said this for 3 years, and so I want to be consistent here. I said I'd rather watch the Kings lose without DeMarcus than watch them lose with DeMarcus. I'm a diehard New York Giants fan. I've been a New York Giants fan since 1960 freaking two. I'd rather watch the Giants lose without Odell Beckham than lose with Odell Beckham because at some point, you know, if you're not benefiting the team, if you're not helping the team win, and it's all about me, and you become a distraction, and you do stupid things time after time after time, like Odell Beckham has done, then I say, you know what? Enough's enough. We're talking about a guy in his fourth year. And then to hear his comments after the game and said, you know what? I'm still going to do it. In other words, you know, it's not like he said, you know what, I'm stupid, it's not going to happen again. No. He didn't say that. He actually said to the contrary. He said, I am going to continue to do that after I score. I mean, how stupid can you be?
I doubt that that the Giants stand for that and allow him to do that. I would be highly surprised if either the McAdoo or the Mara family don't step in some shape, form, or
fashion. They tried now for the last 4 years, and nothing has worked. And at some point, you know, again, at what point does a player become more trouble than he's worth? And that's the question that the Giants are going to have to answer at the end of this year. Not that he's due for a new deal this year, but they said that they would entertain giving him that deal at the end of this year.
Well, he's put himself in a real tight pickle on top of the fact that, you know, you got a quarterback like Eli Manning. That puts pressure on him as well, because do you know where the microphones are coming next? They're going to ask him, Eli, what do you think about that? And now he's going to have to answer, and predicated on how he answers it, it could cause a riff in the locker room as well. So, some crazy times for your Giants there, buddy.
Well, you know, again, they're 0-3. Maybe, you know, if you're 2-1 and maybe you're winning, then maybe you just give them a slap on the wrist and say, you know what, we've talked about it and we've dealt with it. But if you're, you know, again, first series of the game, you know, first series of the game.
Yeah.
He drops a critical third down pass that killed a drive, you know. And it's like, you know, and now he did have, overall, he had a very good game.
Yes, he did. Yeah, you know, he made two touchdowns.
But the catches were tremendous catches.
They were, both of them.
All right, and I'm not sure there were a lot of players in the NFL that could have made those catches.
Right.
So I recognize the guy's talent. He's unbelievably talented. But you know what? There are a lot of talented athletes that I watch play in all sports that don't do a damn thing to help their team win. So what good are they?
I give you a guy who a lot of, when it comes to that position, a lot of guys could model after, and I watch him, is Larry Fitzgerald.
Thank you.
He catches a touchdown.
Yep.
Doesn't matter, and he is one. He's a stud, man. That guy.
How do you not root for a guy like that?
I constantly do. When I watch him, you want to see him at a Super Bowl, winning a Super Bowl. Unfortunately, he hasn't gotten there. But boy, oh boy, that type of talent. And the leadership quality, when you have that much talent, first of all, you can see the difference when Odell's on the field and when he's not on the field. It's undeniable. His talent is undeniable.
It is undeniable.
If he
no
could
question.
Pair that, Grant, with the leadership quality, that in and of itself would help your Giants immensely.
Yeah, I don't think he has any leadership qualities. I haven't seen it. Do you think that taking your teammates down to Miami on a Monday, the week of your playoff game against Green Bay, and posting on social media, you and your buddies on the bow of a yacht in Biscayne Bay, you know, do you think is that the type of leadership you're looking for?
Did he pay for it?
Yeah, he paid for it.
I'm just giving you a bit.
Oh, you meant
time.
Did he pay for going down there?
Did he pay for going down there?
You know what? That's a great question. I know he paid for it in terms of getting killed by
this
the media
is true. Oh, no,
and
no.
by the fans.
He paid, and then... See, when you do stuff like that, a la a Deion Sanders, somebody, you got to back it up, Grant. Now, if he would have did that and backed it up with going out in that playoff game and catching two touchdowns and they win the game, then people tend, and this isn't necessarily good, but people tend to look past those transgressions if you are producing
yes.
at the same time.
Eli Manning was asked, is it just time to be quiet and play the game? His answer, I think it's always time for that. You have to go play. You have to go play and find ways to win and make the plays that are there for you.
Yes.
But Odell Beckham, again, his whole act, I've told you, I've watched him come out an hour before the game, an hour and a half before the game. I've stood on the sideline at games and watched him. And it's all about him. It's like, look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me. It's a joke. It's an absolute joke.
Yeah, I mean, he's used it, obviously, for his benefit, because ultimately this all started with one catch, Grant.
Yes.
That incredible
yeah,
catch.
Against Dallas.
And he
yep.
absolutely off the chart. Yep. Everyone's trying to catch one-handed catches, yep. all these different things. But for him, the next step is to find a way to pair that with winning. Because could you imagine if he was able to pair that in New York City with a Super Bowl?
Yeah.
You think you don't like him now. Oh, boy.
Then you get to the Raiders, and we touched on this yesterday. We had a lot of Kings interviews, but Derek Carr was horrible on Sunday, but I don't know how much I can blame it on him. His offensive line was horrible. They got absolutely manhandled. The Raiders' defense got manhandled. Their offense got manhandled. It was almost like, you know, what we watched on Sunday night, and again, understand where I'm trying to use this as an example. Mm-hmm. It was almost like we watched the best team in football play the worst team in football.
good point, because that pocket was collapsing in ways that we never saw last year. I'm talking, they only allowed like a little over one sack a game last year. They had sacks on
two different plays.
Come on, man.
And when they got the ball with 90 seconds left in the game in mop-up time, they had 95 yards of total offense. We're talking about excellent weather.
Yep.
The Raiders, we're talking about 95 yards of total offense. Now think about that for a minute.
Whoa, Grant. When you look at the receiving core of the Raiders, you get one catch from Crabtree, you get one catch from Amari Cooper, and then you listen to across the line them talking about the fact that they were running at their mouth to Josh Norman, and he's saying, look, guys, you don't come in here and do that. And I thought that, the coaching staff spoke about it of the Redskins, that they were upset, Grant. They heard all the things coming in, and they were going to come out and play smash-mouth football, and boy, did they ever do it in a way that I didn't anticipate the Raiders' offensive side of the football getting manhandled. Defensively, from time to time, with the exception of maybe Mack and Irvin and a couple other guys, they handled their business. But offensively, I didn't see that coming for the Raiders.
All right. We have a lot of things going on today. John Clayton is going to talk our NFL football with us. Coming up at 3:30. So we're going to do that in the next segment. We've got phone calls to get to. Doug and I with you until 6:45. We got a full show for you. Looking forward to it. We'll be right back on Sports 1140 KHDK. All right. We continue on right here on Sports 1140 KHDK. We're going to talk some NFL football with John Clayton here in just a minute. Get his take on, he lives in Seattle. I want to get his take on the Seahawks.
Yes.
I want to get his take on what we saw Sunday night from the Raiders and some other things that went on the field on Sunday. So we'll talk with the professor, John Clayton, coming up here in just a moment. If you want to call the show, 339-1140. That's 339-1140, 800-920-1140. I should have called John when I was up in Seattle a couple of weeks ago, and I didn't.
Didn't even think.
I could have had him meet me right at the Met. We had a lot of room. I could have bought him dinner for all the great things that he's done for me over the years. But I blew it.
The professor would have hooked you up.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, it is.
No, I didn't want to be hooked up. I was just going.
Oh, I didn't mean hooked up like that. I mean, he's got you. It's 3:31. Time to watch Sacramento FC host the Real Monarchs SLC Wednesday 7:30 at Papa Murphy's Park. Tickets at SacRepublicFC.com.
And that's not Real Madrid, right?
No.
Okay,
because I
was listening yesterday, and I thought it was Real Madrid that was coming to town. And even me, I was like, wow, I got to, you know.
I did the live spot and said it accidentally, and then I said to myself, wow, that would be cool. But no, it's the Real Monarchs. and I'm sure, our good friend Chris Verlade went, whoa.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Chris fell off his chair.
Yes.
John Clayton will be in a minute. You look at – you know, the NFL right now, and you look at the standings, and you look at that NFC West, it looks awful. I mean, it really does. It looks terrible. It's, you know, Seattle's 1-2, Arizona's 1-2, the Niners are 0-3, you know, the Rams are 2-1, and is anybody seriously taking the Rams, you know, like, wow, they're going to win the division?
I'm not. They're going to be in the mix, Grant. I'm gonna say that. You look at Donald. I mean, he is a stud
really
lineman. The ability of Goff to throw the ball. They got some. You know, obviously they got some weapons for him. But I will say this. 3 weeks from now, I think things in the standings across the board are going to look a lot different than they do right this minute.
The team that's going to win, that I would say, without any doubt, like I can just go on and say right now, this team is 100% going to win the division, barring an injury to their quarterback or the Atlanta
Falcons. Step out on a limb. Why don't you?
Well, but I'm saying, I can't. Well, how do I, would you pick the Atlanta Falcons to win the division if Matt Ryan gets hurt on Sunday and is out for the year?
No.
All right, so that to me is a lock.
Yes.
The Atlanta Falcons are going to win that division.
Right. I would agree with that. Anything else, Grant?
Wide open.
I would say wide open.
Yeah. Wide open.
No one is stepping up right now.
But I would say this. The game coming up this week in Denver with the Raiders and the Broncos, I think the loser of that game is going to have some issues. But we're going to talk with, as we promised, John Clayton, nice enough to spend a couple minutes with us here on Sports 1140. John, it's Grant Napier and Doug Christie. How are you?
Good. Great to talk to you. We're on the verge of the basketball season.
Yeah.
Totally. Remember, this is a thing called football. That's pretty important.
Yes, it is pretty important. And, you know, Doug being from Seattle, a huge Seahawks fan, and you work up there. So give me, is the biggest issue, well, we know the biggest issue is the offensive line, but is it, you know, last year, same situation, good success in the middle of the year towards the end. Can they do the same thing, or is it just too different of a team right now?
No, it's just like the same pattern. It doesn't change too much. It's almost like the weather patterns here in Seattle. It's like, you know, as you get close to the fall and you get into this November, October, and that, it's going to rain and it's going to start getting chillier, but the team on the field starts getting hotter. And so typical type of Seahawks, and this has been the way now since, you know, just even going back to 2012. I mean, they're 11-7 in September and they average 22 points a game. If you look at the way that they finish the season, usually in the last five games, they win 80% of their games and they average 28. And so this is just a typical slow start. And I think, you know, there's a little bit of this around the league because you can see it in the low scoring, is that, you know, when you're trying to put young offenses together with young offensive linemen, you don't have enough time to really practice hard. You don't really get the full hitting that you need. It just takes longer. And that's what seems to be the pattern of this team. The fortunate thing for them is that their defense is so good that it will keep them in games till they get this all fixed. And the schedule is reasonably easy, so they should be fine.
When you look at the NFC West, Grant and I were just talking. Right now, the Rams at 2-1. Is there any way to think that they, not maybe win, but they stay up and there is something in Los Angeles for Rams fans to be excited about?
I'm not there yet.
Not there yet.
Think about the two teams that they scored points on. It was Indianapolis and it was San Francisco.
Okay.
And so, you know, their big problem is still going to be their offense. In fact, you look at the defense hasn't really been able to get together too well. So, no, they played Washington and they had a pretty close game there, but they're not there yet. And so you can't really proclaim them because, again, if you look at the, you know, the Colts and you look at the 49ers, I mean, you know, these are two teams. Like, when Luck comes back, they'll be better, but Luck's not going to be back at this stage, and Luck wasn't there to play. So in the end, I mean, these two teams were kind of set up for the Rams to do well. The big thing that you can see as far as the improvement, and you can maybe make the argument that at the moment they have a chance to maybe pass Arizona as the number two team in the division, is that they've added so much on offense. In fact, their offensive changes, getting, you know, Robert Woods at wide receiver, Cooper Kupp at wide receiver, getting Sammy Watkins at wide receiver, mm-hmm. a couple young tight ends, and then you throw into the mix that they got Andrew Whitworth at left tackle. I mean, that's some of the best moves in football right now on offense, and so that's caused the improvement, but it's still too early to proclaim that they're the best team in the division.
We're talking with John Clayton right here on Sports 1140 KHDK. John, I don't like to make too much out of one game, but what we saw Sunday night, Washington looked like the best team in the NFL, and the Raiders looked like the worst team. I don't recall a one-sided game quite like that in a while, especially when we're talking about a supposedly good team with the Raiders. Give me your thoughts on that.
Well, see, the thing that kind of baffled me a little bit with the Raiders is that I was at the last preseason game and was working their sidelines. And I looked at the defense, and I didn't know if it was going to be there. And yet they come out, they hold Tennessee to 16 points in Nashville. Pretty good job. They had a great game in week two. And so the defense, maybe it was miraged in the sense that it's not as, you know, I don't really think it's going to be that good. And so to win, this team pretty much has to outscore. And I just think, you know, flat out, they just had a bad game. I mean, Amari Cooper's had too many drops in the first couple of weeks. You know, Derek Carr, who's been great, just had an off game. So I wouldn't read too much more into it. I mean, what you can see that the AFC West, particularly the top three teams, it's right now the best division in football because you've got, you know, for the most part, two teams with good defenses, Kansas City and Denver. You've got a great offense with one exception of one game with the Raiders. And so I think it's going to be very competitive. The thing to kind of watch right now is how do the Raiders match up against physical teams? Because you can see Andy Reid has designed his team to be physical with the offensive line, physical on defense, and it's been able to get the best of the Raiders. If the Raiders can start beating the Chiefs, then everything should be fine. But overall, this is going to be a great race in this division, and I just kind of write off the offensive problems on Sunday. It's just an off game.
Okay, so the offensive line of the Raiders, which is arguably one of the best in football, got absolutely manhandled for four quarters. You just attribute that? Is that, you just thinking it's just one of those games then for that group of five?
Yeah, I think it's one of those games because look how they did in the first 2 weeks. They look really good. And so I think that, you know, just kind of hit the skids in week three. And, I mean, this team's too talented on the offensive line. I mean, what the heck? They've got $42 million a year tied up in four offensive linemen. And they're all good. They're all Pro Bowl quality type guys. And so I think, you know, you kind of shake that off and say, you know, Washington, because, you know, Washington's kind of a sneaky team. You know, I know coming out of training camp, I thought that they were going to be, you know, one of the, you know, real surprise teams. You know, not that they were too bad of a surprise because they've got good talent, but they're sneaky good on defense, sneaky good. And I think that sneaky good defense did a number on the Raiders pretty obviously on Sunday.
John, in a similar situation, a great offensive line in Dallas hasn't really produced at the level I think people might have thought, which has hampered Ezekiel Elliott's running ability. Last night they get a W. Do you think that this is a trend that will continue in Dallas, or is this just an anomaly?
I mean, honestly, I didn't think their offensive line this year was going to be as good as it was in the last couple of years. And the reason is there's change. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I don't know. I like Lil Collins, but I don't know how good he is right now at right tackle. I think he was really good at guard. So that's still a transition because, remember, Doug Free retired. Then they lose Ron Leary and Chaz Green. I mean, the only thing that you can say positive, this is the first three-game stretch where he hasn't been hurt. I mean, he's been hurt most of the last couple of years, and they have Jonathan Cooper, the, you know, high draft choice failure behind him. But, you know, it's not as talented, but they've got three great offensive linemen. And when those offensive linemen, you know, get into good sync, then they do well. And I think they did okay last night, but you're right. It's not played up to the level. And I don't know if it's going to be at the level it's been the last couple of years. It's still one of the best. In fact, when you're talking Oakland, you're talking Dallas, they're two of the best lines in football. And really, in a league right now where you may only have eight really good offensive lines.
John, the situation with Odell Beckham in New York, all right, he's in his fourth year now, and, you know, John Mara comes out and will deal with it internally. Well, they've tried to deal with it for 4 years. Yeah, he's talented, but it's not like the Giants are winning with him. How do you think this thing plays out?
Well, I think what it plays out is finances, because he's now heading toward a negotiation in his contract, and if he's going to do knucklehead type of things, then they're just going to franchise him and try to go year by year with him. I mean, you know, he's got to show some growing up because, I mean, the things that he does, I mean, not that they're illegal, which is fortunate, but they hurt the team. And when you get a penalty for making a stupid celebration like that and you get a 15-yarder tack, you know, a 15-yarder that gave field position to the opponent, can't keep doing this stuff. I mean, he's done it now too many times, too many battles with Josh Norman, and he's got to start growing up because if not, they're going to – because he's at the stage for talent. I mean, he's going to break the absolute bank for wide receivers. Right now it's 17, and clearly for talent, he can get more than $17 million a year, but they may just put the brakes on if he continues like this and just say, hey, we're going to franchise you for the next couple of years, and you're not going to make 17.
John, how surprised are you at the Bengals at 0-3? Marvin Lewis, don't know if this is obviously a contract year. Andy Dalton now, all this quarterback controversy. How surprised are you that they're sitting at 0-3?
I'm not surprised that they dropped back, but not to this degree. You know, last year they let Mohamed Sanu and Marvin Jones go at wide receiver, and they go from 26 points a game on offense to 18. Mm-hmm. Now, remember, throw into the fact that you include Tyler Eifert, their tight end, having injuries most of the season, and that's carried over this year. So you take three of the top four pass catchers away from Andy Dalton, that's going to hurt. Then you take two offensive linemen, the best two offensive linemen, Andrew Whitworth and Kevin Zeitler, away from the offensive line, and have two tackles from 2015 that are horrible. You can see where the decline is. I mean, they're breaking Andy Dalton, and consequently, they're breaking that team on offense. And because of the fact that the defense hasn't stepped up yet, I mean, 0-3 was something I never envisioned, but I definitely saw problems when you take four quality players out of an offense in a two-year period and have Tyler Eifert on the sidelines injured.
John, always appreciate your time. Thanks very much. Be well.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate
right.
you.
Good stuff, John Clayton. And when we come back, the Hall of Famer, the great Orlando Cepeda, many great years with the Giants before he moved on to the Cardinals, one of the great players during his era. He is from Puerto Rico, and obviously we know the destruction from the hurricane down in Puerto Rico. So we're going to spend a couple minutes with the great Orlando Cepeda when we come back right here on Sports 11. All right, our thanks to John Clayton. Obviously, it has been a brutal month weather-wise for so many people in this world. And the recent hurricanes and the destruction in Texas and Florida, and now with the hurricane that has just completely, for lack of a better term, destroyed Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria. And the sad thing is the situation is not getting better. It's getting worse. And obviously, unlike Florida and unlike Houston, where you could have, let's say, a group of 10 people in Rhode Island say, let's get a truck and jump, you know, with food and diapers and blah, 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 and let's make the drive down to Houston. Well, you can't do that in Puerto Rico. It's in the middle of the freaking ocean, all right? And it's only accessible by either boat or by air. And it's really sad. There's no power on Puerto Rico. There's no water, and there's not much food. And with that said, a guy that's from Puerto Rico and is a household name, not only here in Northern California, but really for all baseball fans around North America, the great Hall of Famer Orlando Cepeda. Orlando, it was great to see you earlier today. It's Grant Napier, and I'm with Doug Christie, and I really appreciate you coming on. Thank you. I can't even imagine what goes through your mind when you look at the pictures from your homelands right now.
Very, very sad, Grant. Very sad, you know. It's so bad that in Puerto Rico, because they don't have television, they don't have nothing, they don't know what's going on in the island. But we are here, and we share the news every day. It's sad, very sad.
Do you think, what can we do? And when I say we, I don't mean Doug and I, but what can we as Americans do? Because I think that we answered the call, and when I say we, I'm generalizing to the crisis down in Houston and that area and in Florida, but it seems like not enough is being done for Puerto Rico. What do you think people can do?
I don't know. I agree with you, because a friend of mine called me today, and then he told me the same. So slow. People, you know, taking Puerto Rico need help right now. So I mean, I'm here, I'm doing my best to try to solve the problem, but Puerto Rico needs help with food, with not, it's nothing there, nothing.
You know, finding a way to, whether it is get supplies, get water, is there, whether it's Red Cross or whoever that might be, in your estimation, what would be the best way for our listeners, for people to try to reach out?
Well, I don't know. You know, I wish I know what to do. But, you know, nobody's doing anything. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it's taking so long to help Puerto Rico, but Puerto Rico's in bad shape, you know. This country don't know, you know, what is in Puerto Rico right now going through. They need help there. They don't have no water.
No food.
No food, no water.
No electricity.
No electricity. Nothing. Nothing. Nothing.
It's unbelievably sad. I can't even imagine... you know, again, I talked to you earlier about this, Orlando, as we're talking with Orlando Cepeda, the great Hall of Famer. You watch the video on the news, and then I can't even imagine. It's obviously so much worse when you if you're there and the people, they're crying. You know, they're begging, Orlando, they're begging for help, and it just doesn't seem like it's coming fast enough.
I agree with you, Graham, very, very, very much. I agree with you, you know. I mean, everything is shut down. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
You know,
they told me today they got some plane landing in Puerto Rico, some ship, you know, coming from the state, but still nothing happened.
You know, Orlando, the power has been out. Have you been able to, whether it's cell phone or landline, been able to contact any of your family to check on people there, your loved ones?
No, not at all. It's hard to find people there. You know, like my son's mother-in-law, they can find her in Puerto Rico. You know,
Yeah, I will let people know that there are a couple of different ways that you can help out the people in Puerto Rico. One is the American Red Cross. They're providing aid to both Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands, and the money that they raise goes toward delivering relief supplies such as water, rice, beans, insect repellent, trash bags. They are also shipping in satellite phones. UNICEF is doing a phenomenal job because they're providing immediate support to children affected by this Hurricane Maria. 90% of every dollar spent goes directly to helping kids. Again, you can go to UNICEF USA and donate there. You can check out United for Puerto Rico. They have a campaign. They are helping out. The Salvation Army is providing food. They're providing shelter and cleaning supplies to the victims of Hurricane Irma and Maria. So, again, any of those areas, folks, you know, UNICEF, the American Red Cross, the Salvation Army, we encourage everyone to do that. Orlando, thank you very much for calling in. We are concerned about your homeland. I think that every person, when they look at the pictures, their heart sinks. But we can all help. I hope that we all do what we can to help the people down there, and we wish you the best. It's great. It was great seeing you today, and thank you very much for calling into the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
So Orlando Cepeda, and boy, what a player he was. I didn't really want to talk baseball with him right now because it's not appropriate to talk baseball.
No doubt.
But I got to tell you, I mean, I'm sure just like everyone else, I'm watching the news with everything going on in our world, and it's just. And again, I'm not going to, you know how I am about politics here, okay? All I'm going to say is that Puerto Rico needs our help. And I don't think they're getting our help, all right? We reached out, and I think that, you know, we saw great help for the Houston area and what transpired in Florida. I'm just not getting the sense that that same help is going towards Puerto Rico. And I know that money is tight when you end up donating here and you end up donating there, but there are people that are their lives depend on it.
You know, if there is a way, and you can go online, ladies and gentlemen, and look at it, there's a way to text that $10 usually goes right to your phone bill.
It goes right to it.
But a lot of the time, out of sight, out of mind, and we have to help people when we can.
Yes.
It is 3:56. Time to watch the Sacramento Republic FC host the Real Monarchs SLC Wednesday, 7:30 at Papa Murphy's Park. Tickets at sacrepublicfc.com.
All right. We are going to come right back. We've got 1 hour in the books. Our thanks to John Clayton for joining us and the Hall of Famer Orlando Cepeda. Coming up, Aaron Torres, college sports analyst, to talk about what looks like a big-time mess for college basketball right after this.